Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources, and I'm going to start with some odds and ends of articles from AARP, the magazine. So let's start with Relearning to Fly. Keep tensions down by packing patience and remembering your manners. So this is from the upfront section, Go. Be prepared. You know you're going to have to take the shoes and your jacket off at security, says Lydia Ramsey, an etiquette expert in Savannah, Georgia, so don't wait until you put your bag on the belt and hold everybody up. That's unless you're over 75. That's my addition. Then you don't have to take off your shoes most places. Don't hog the overhead. I've noticed that some people, as soon as they see a space, shove their bag in as quickly as they can, even if they're at the back of the plane, said Ramsey. You need to put your bag over your own seat. Be sensitive to your seatmate. Most people want to find some peace and quiet, Ramsey says. If the other person is chatty, politely excuse yourself. That's the time to just say, "Excuse me, I'm going to read my book now." Give the armrest to the middle passenger. That's really the only thing that middle person has, says Jacqueline Whitmore, a former airline flight attendant and the founder of the Protocol School of Palm Beach in Florida. Think before reclining. Be mindful of how your behavior affects other people, says Whitmore. If someone behind you is trying to work on their laptop and asks you to move the seat up a little bit, then try your best to comply. Control the kids. Traveling with young companions, make sure they're not bothering other passengers, like kicking the seat in front of them, says Ramsey. That will get the ire of the person in front of you. Now moving on to Upfront Read, we wrote a novel. Dolly Parton and James Patterson talk about their new book and their new album. If one definition of creativity is finding a way to connect things that are seemingly unconnected, then pairing thriller writer James Patterson with the perpetually joyful country music legend Dolly Parton has to be among the most creative book writing partnerships out there. And it worked beautifully for the novel Run, Rose, Run, out March 7th with an accompanying soundtrack by Parton. While Patterson, 74, is the mastermind behind the novel's fast-flowing plot lines and cliffhanger chapter endings, you can hear Parton, 76, loud and clear in the two main characters, Annie Lee Keys, a feisty young singer who hitchhikes her way to Nashville, carrying little more than big dreams and faded jeans, the title of one of the songs. Then there's Ruth Anna Ridner, a seasoned country music megastar who takes Annie Lee under her wing. It's suspenseful and fun with a hefty dose of romance. How did this come about? JP, I've always admired Dolly, and I had this germ of an idea for a novel. I contacted her, and she said, "Well, come on down and we'll talk." DP, and we talked and talked and really found that we liked each other, and I really liked his idea. Of course, I moved to Nashville when I was 18, so I understood the character Annie Lee. And now that I've been in the business so long, I relate to Ruth Anna. JP, Dolly contributed a lot to exactly what the story should be. DP, but you're the one that gets all the mystery in there. I didn't have as mysterious a life as either of those women. What was the writing process like? DP, he would send me pages. Then I would get ideas for songs and send the lyrics back. But he hadn't heard any of the music with the instruments and the melodies. So I invited him down for a big listening party. JP, when we met, she said, "I've written thousands of country songs. I could write one right here standing on my head. Want to see?" And I'll tell you, right after that meeting, Dolly sent songs, and I was like, "Damn, I'd better get going here." And sometimes you would write songs, and that would give me ideas for a couple of new chapters, or for just a phrase. DP, it was probably a good year and a half, I guess, from our first meeting until we got it in the book. James, you have collaborated with so many people, including Bill Clinton. How did this compare? JP, they've all been good, and one of the things about both Dolly and President Clinton is that they brought authenticity to the book. Here's what would happen. This is what it would really feel like. So there's that similarity, but she is a lot more fun. DP, and Bill Clinton can't write a song worth a flip. She laughs. JP, it worked out great. I mean, here we are. We're both over 40, and I don't think we've been better at our game. The album is just spectacular. DP, well, thank you. And this article was as told to Christiana Inzito. So the books are Run, Rose, Run with the music. And that's all the information I have on those, but they sound awesome. Now, moving on to another interesting article, Up Front Live, I think it's under, Where to Find Hidden Cash. If you're clearing out a loved one's house, check these spots first. The urge to stash money at home for emergencies is a common one. If you're helping a family member downsize, be sure to check these places for cash or valuables. Toilet tanks. Look for a jar stuffed with jewelry or cash. Also, make sure that nothing is taped inside the lid. Freezers. Gold coins frozen in ice and plastic zipper bags filled with cash have been found. Bookshelves. Check for hollowed out Bibles and dictionaries. Then shake out every book where everything from $100 bills to dividend checks has been found stashed between pages. Pantries. Look inside cereal boxes, flour bags, and coffee cans. Under floorboards. Check for loose boards under throw rugs, new nails that look out of place, and loose wall-to-wall carpet edges. Old trunks. Steamer trunks from World War II had special compartments built into them for wives to pack mementos for their husbands. Check under the lining and look for a false bottom. The secret compartment is usually on the right-hand side of the back of the trunk near the bottom. Closets. Go through every piece of clothing and every box. Money has been found in shoeboxes and cigar boxes and inside the pockets and linings of old jackets. And finally, drawers. Women's vanities usually have at least one drawer with a false bottom to hide the good jewelry. Now let's take a look at Upfront Tech. Should you get a digital driver's license? Well, your smartphone may soon take a big step toward replacing your wallet. Apple is rolling out an ID verification capability for iPhones and Apple Watches. Google is working toward a similar system for Android users. Let's take a look. Who can use a virtual driver's license? The Apple feature, which stores the license in an iPhone's wallet app, is rolling out in Connecticut, Georgia, Arizona, Iowa, Kentucky, Maryland, Utah, and Oklahoma. A handful of states already have their own ID apps, including Delaware, Colorado, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Arizona, and Alabama. How can I get a digital ID? In some states, the Department of Motor Vehicles will send a license to your device. In others, scan your ID card with your phone, then conduct a facial scan. Where can I use the ID? TSA security checkpoints will be the first place Apple Wallet users can present digital IDs. Some police departments are not yet considering them the same as cards. So I won't need to carry a driver's license? Carrying a card as a backup is still a safe choice if your phone gets misplaced or if its battery dies. And here is a cartoon you. You've got the emoji thing down. You're adding hearts and dollars and thumbs up signs to your texts. You're on fire. So now you're ready to take your thumbs to the next level. Make a Memoji on the iPhone. This is an animated caricature that looks like you. To create one, launch your message as app, and then while in a conversation, tap on the sticker icon. It's the one that looks like a face with the heart eyes. Tap on the plus button and move through the screens to choose the features that appear closest to yours. Tap Done to save your Memoji. Then, when composing a message, tap on the sticker icon to select the Memoji that you saved. Make a Bitmoji. This is Android or iPhone. This is a cartoon-like image similar to a Memoji. You will need to install the free Bitmoji app to create and use one. Android phones vary, so follow the app's instructions. Now we have a new life for old media. What you need to preserve: movies, music, photos, and more. Got a box of VHS home movies or a bunch of family photos on an old floppy disk? In our constantly evolving digital world, it's a good idea to get that old media transferred to modern devices. Here's the path to save those memories and important data. What you have. So the categories are what you have, what you need, and what you'll get. Printed photos. You need a scanner, and you'll get JPG digital photos on your computer or stored in the cloud. LPs. You need a turntable plus USB cable and maybe an adapter plus a computer plus audio software. You'll get MP3s or high-quality WAV, AFI or AIFF or FLAC files to play on your computer or phone. Cassette tapes. You need a cassette player plus USB cable and maybe an adapter, a computer and audio software. You get MP3s. Videotapes. You need a USB video converter plus a computer. You get digital video files and MP4, AVI, or WMV format to play on your computer. You have DVDs. You need a computer and a DVD drive plus video software. You'll get digital files in MKV or MP4 format. And finally, floppy disks. External floppy disk reader, this is what you need, plus computer, and maybe an adapter. You'll get new files on your computer hard drive. Now, we're going to take a break from these bits and pieces for a minute and go to the Centennial Living Complete Guide to Heart Health for those over 50. And we're in one of the last sections. It's titled Wake Up Call, and it's about people who have survived. So today we're going to look at A Couple Recovers Together, James and Millie Ruiz. Every day, James and Millie Ruiz of Arlington, Texas, go for a walk together, sometimes covering up to 3 miles. Considering that the 84-year-olds have both been through major cardiovascular events, that's a notable accomplishment. But they don't plan to stop anytime soon. We're both getting up in years, but we love our lives, and that means staying active, said James. We know that being healthy and getting exercise is what helped us both survive what we did. Millie suffered an ischemic stroke in 2014. James remembers sitting at breakfast, both of them reading the newspaper, and his wife suddenly began struggling to speak properly. Knowing the signs of a stroke and the importance of taking quick action, James rushed Millie to the hospital, which fortunately was only a mile away, and ER doctors administered a clot-busting medicine that restored blood flow to her brain. Because the time frame between the onset of stroke symptoms and the injection was so short, less than half an hour, Millie was much less affected than she might have been otherwise. Slightly impaired speech was the most noticeable lingering symptom, but with speech therapy, she was able to recover fully. James's issue, by contrast, was much less noticeable, but potentially just as dangerous. He was diagnosed with aortic stenosis, which is a narrowing of the aortic valve between the left ventricle of the heart and the aorta. Doctors weren't sure what caused the issue for him, but it was restricting blood flow from the heart, and the condition can go undetected unless there are symptoms. James was first diagnosed with aortic stenosis in his mid-50s when the doctor heard a flutter during a regular checkup. He found out later that both his brother and father had the same condition. We figured then it was a family trait, and we'd just have to live with it, he says. Since it wasn't causing symptoms, which typically involve shortness of breath, chest pain, and fatigue, he chose not to have surgery for it, but he did get more diligent about scheduling regular checkups. In 2000, after he and Millie moved to Texas from Colorado post-retirement, a cardiologist warned him the condition was worsening. An avid trombone player, James worried that the stenosis would begin to diminish his respiratory capacity, but it wasn't until 2018 that he finally took action. That's when I began to realize that this could really end me, because I could be risking a heart attack or a stroke, he says. I couldn't do that to Millie as long as there was a way to prevent it. So in 2019, he had a minimally invasive surgery called transcatheter aortic valve replacement, followed by a few months of cardiac rehab. Although he felt he had had plenty of energy before that, he did notice feeling more energetic once rehab was done, and he tired less easily. Since then, he and Molly have focused on heart-healthy habits, like their daily walk, as well as adding in some strength training. They also find a sense of purpose from volunteering for their church. The couple delivers groceries to disadvantaged parishioners, and James plays his trombone nearly every day. A little sidebar article here, what they changed. Log at least 2 to 3 miles of walking every day. Go outside whenever possible to enjoy the sunshine. Bolster a sense of purpose through volunteering. And never skip regular checkups. And there's only one more of this, so let's go ahead with it today. Living in Denial. This is by Diane Jacobson. Valentine's Day will always be meaningful for Diane Jacobson, 61, who lives in the Kansas City, Missouri area. It was on that day in 2017 that she was told she had a heart attack. The diagnosis came after several days of ignoring the symptoms. First, she had started experiencing tightness in her chest during exercise, but she chalked it up to working out too hard since the pain went away when she stopped. Then, on a long uphill walk with a friend, she felt like a stake was being driven into her chest. It stopped me, she recalls. I had to bend over and rest, but it subsided. That night, I had the same type of pain, and I had this odd sensation that came up through my neck and throat, and my left arm was numb. Still, she didn't call her doctor or alert her husband until the next day. That's when the nurse told her to get to the emergency room ASAP. I wasn't freaked out because I thought it couldn't happen to me, she says. I'm healthy, not overweight. I thought it might be something else. It didn't even dawn on me to go to the hospital in the middle of the night. She says even the doctors were shocked. A doctor in the ER started to come into the room, checked the chart, and then walked out. When she came back, she said she thought she had the wrong room. Within an hour, the doctors determined she had had a heart attack, and they found that my widowmaker artery was 99% blocked, she says. The doctor placed a stent in it, but he thought the blockage was a fluke. He told her it would be good for 5 years. Jacobson, a healthy eater who exercised regularly, says she didn't change her lifestyle since she thought it wouldn't be an issue going forward. My cholesterol has always been high, but my doctor said my HDL was high too, and my LDL was under control, so they weren't concerned, she said. But a year and a half later, I started having chest pain again, despite having passed a stress test. I finally convinced my doctor to check the artery again, and the same vessel was 98% blocked, just 4 centimeters away from where the original blockage was. Since her second stent surgery, Jacobson, who has now learned she has a family history of heart problems, has made changes. She pays more attention to her diet, limits cholesterol, and takes a statin. She continues to exercise and works harder at lowering her stress. She took a job that was less demanding and reduced her hours. Jacobson wonders if a contributor to her heart issue is inflammation. She has rheumatoid arthritis, which is one reason she tries to follow the anti-inflammatory Mediterranean diet. I encourage all women to educate themselves about the symptoms of a heart attack. Don't be a martyr, she says. Put yourself first and go to the ER or see a doctor when you experience symptoms. It's better to feel foolish than to die of a heart attack, she says. And what she changed? She started a statin, she reduced her stress by changing jobs, and she exercises regularly. So speaking of stress reduction, in our Prevention, Finding Your Calm series of articles we've been reading, we are looking at 13 positive affirmations for when life starts becoming too much. And we're up to number 6. You can do this. It may seem simple, but sometimes the most straightforward affirmations can be the most powerful. Katie Likom, LCSW, LISW-CP, BC-TMH, says, I live by this affirmation because sometimes I doubt myself, and I need to be reminded that I have things under control. I am capable, and I have the ability to get what I need done, actually done. Likom says she repeats this mantra before she walks into a crowd and before she makes a difficult decision. It really reminds me that I am a strong woman and capable of so much more than I thought, she says. Again, that mantra, you can do this. 7. Progress, not perfection. When we have a big goal in mind, it's easy to get overwhelmed or feel we've achieved nothing until it's perfect. But that's unattainable, and it's a surefire way to set yourself up for failure. Instead, Tisha Rowe, a family medicine doctor and founder and CEO of the Rowe Network, says that changing your mindset to focus on small victories can make a big difference. I have been sizes 2 to 12, she says. I wasn't my happiest at either end of the spectrum, but I have learned to find joy in every step of the journey by focusing on small incremental steps versus the long haul. Again, that was progress, not perfection. And finally for this session, I fight for my beliefs. Sometimes you just need to repeat the truth to yourself to remind yourself what truth is, says Becca Anderson, author of several self-help books, including Badass Affirmations, The Wit and Wisdom of Wild Women. She often turns to this mantra as well as, I have unshakable dedication to my goals, when she needs some extra support. Whenever I feel down on myself, or whenever I'm struggling to be who I want to be, I use these affirmations as mantras to refocus my center, says Anderson. Even if I don't feel like I have unshakable dedication right this second. For example, repeating the mantra that I says I do will guide me toward making my dedication come true. So again, I fight for my beliefs. Or, I have unshakable dedication to my goals. Now back to AARP the magazine. Up front, what I know now. This is by Valerie Bertinelli. The teen heartthrob, hot in Cleveland actress and ex-wife of the late Eddie Van Halen, wants you to be nice to yourself. Food is love. For Ed Van Halen, his mother's cooking was the only connection they had. It softened his heart for her because she was a hard person to get along with. Eating wasn't high on his priority list, but watching him love his mother through the food she made for him was lovely. We're not that different. All I grew up with was Italian pasta dishes. I had no idea how to make Indonesian food before I met Ed. But that's all that Mrs. Van Halen made because she's Indonesian. She made bami, an Indonesian pasta dish, and it was a little light bulb for me. Indonesians have a noodle dish too. I wish getting along with people was as simple as enjoying their food. Owning your regrets. I don't buy it when someone says, I have no regrets. It's made me who I am today. That's BS. You can take different paths to get to where you need to be. I regret not asking more questions and opening up with my mom. I was uncomfortable with her pain. It was selfish. It's not about you. I could have been so much more understanding with why Ed needed alcohol and drugs to deal with his pain. That's what he was taught at a young age. They're the only things he had in his toolbox. I took it too personally, like, if you love me, you wouldn't do this. That's not true. He did love me more than anyone has ever loved me in my entire life. I was selfish in that I just wanted him to get better for me. As I got older, I just wanted him to get better for him. Throw away your scale. I don't weigh myself anymore. No matter what that number was, I judged myself by a number that has nothing to do with who I am as a human being. I have three of them in my house, sitting there looking at me. I can't throw them away, but I did push one underneath my dresser. Giving yourself a break. I used to say, when I'm 88, I'm going to be like Betty White, eating my hot dogs and red wine candy and drinking vodka on the rocks with a lemon twist. So I recently had a hot dog, but I'm not as crazy about red vines. I prefer Twizzlers. The joy of unplugging. I was following way too many political things on Twitter, and it puts me in a dull mood. Now I push my phone away so much that my son, Wolfie, will call the landline at home and say, "Where's your phone?" because he wants to FaceTime. Though there are few games I like to play on it, like Matchington Mansion. And finally, feeling your feelings. When I have a feeling that I'm uncomfortable with, the first thing that comes into my head is, I don't want to feel this. I try instead to think, high feeling, high anxiety, I don't know why you're here, and now I'm going to try to feel where in my body you are. Is it my heart because I'm grieving something that I miss? Then I try to sit with it, just feel it in my body, and let it move through. And that's life. Don't judge it. Don't judge yourself. Just feel it. And this article by Valerie Bertinelli, 61, who hosts Food Network, Valerie's Home Cooking, and Kids Baking Championship, was told to Joel Stein. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Karen Edwards. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.